okay?
I am okay.
Fine,
yeah.
Okay. Just not sure.
I hurt my back basically really badly.
I think this is something you can say. You were walking as if in slow-mo and I wasn't sure what was happening.
I know, you thought I was just being really casual about getting over to your studio. No, basically straight after the chart show, I moved really suddenly. And I think I've pulled something in my back, so I very nearly vomited just before my show, before the request show. But
is it sore now?
It feels like I've been shot. constantly for 2 hours. That's what it feels like. But it's fine. And I made it through my show. And okay. I'm here to tell the tale.
Now,
fine.
I'm sure what you'd like to do right now is just go home.
No, I want to talk about other people's problems.
Are
that's
you
why
sure?
I'm here. Yes.
Okay, let me do the intro to the surgery.
Fine.
Hello, I'm Aled. This is the surgery. It's 9 o'clock. We're now going to talk about your problems. So give us a call.
Not
Jamila. Your problems. So call us now. 03700 100 100 81199 on the text. We're joined by two doctors tonight, which is very exciting. And we're joined by Jamila. For the first couple of minutes before her back goes anyway.
They can't get rid of me.
Tonight, we're going to talk about lots of things, including conventional versus homeopathic treatment. What's better for you and what does it all mean? Have you been suffering from depression? Are you down? Suffering from insomnia? Give us a call and talk about it. 03700 100 100 81199 on the text. And he is back. Dr. Sanjay, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, good, thank you. Good,
yeah,
thank
very you good. Much. You look shocked that I came to you. Sorry. You're in a studio, Sanjay.
Where am I?
All right, cool. Let's go straight to line one. Hello, James.
Hello.
Hello, James. How are you tonight? How can we help?
Not too bad. I'm just actually giving a wee ring in. Find a little bit of help about my current situation.
Okay, what's wrong?
I recently broke up with my girlfriend.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's over a month now, but really what happened was it was mostly my fault why we broke up, and obviously she's now seeing somebody else. Me and her still actually had quite a bit of contact. Ideally I'd like to see her again and be with her again, and I think she's sort of feeling the same way based on how we've got on recently.
Okay, that's positive. But she's seeing someone else, is she?
Yes, exactly. That's the problem.
And what's her words about this? Have you talked about this? A possible future?
Well, yeah, it's something we have talked about, but at the same time, we don't really want to hurt her current boyfriend. I personally don't want to, and I'm not really sure how she feels about that.
Okay. Jamila, now I'm sure many people at home will sympathise with James.
Totally.
Because he wants his ex back.
No, I think that, completely. But what's the nature of your, without being too graphic, what's the nature of the visits that you're having with your girlfriend behind the boyfriend's back? Are you getting quite intimate?
Yeah, nearly the same as if it was, we're still going out.
Respectfully, you're kind of already hurting the current boyfriend at the moment.
But then, is that his problem?
It's not his problem, and it's not his fault. What I'm saying is that, therefore, if you're already kind of in the middle of it now, and you're both engaging in this, then that's no longer really the biggest problem that you have. Now, what you need to do, in my opinion, is work out what she wants to do. She has to make the decision, which man does she want to be with? Because I think both
Absolutely.
Of you deserve that.
Absolutely. And I think, James, there were reasons why you split up. There were reasons why she's gone with someone else, and I think before you two can get back to where you were, there's lots of talking to be had.
Yeah.
And this complication with someone else is just impossible to work through, really. You need to say to her, make a decision, make sure they have finished before you can consider carrying on, and then if she makes that decision, then the talking begins, not the physical side, because that will just complicate the whole
messes
thing.
Messes everything up. Yeah.
Right.
But give it a go, right? And take your time with it, because there's no need to rush. She was your girlfriend, and if you're meant to be, she will be again.
Right, well, thanks very much, Jamila. Thank you.
No worries.
No
Good
worries.
Luck with it, James. I really hope it works out well. Sanjay? I just realised you were very quiet there.
No, I completely agree with what you both said, and I think it must just be really confusing for him, because he's got then no closure, he can't move on, because it's just all the issues and tissues just are all in one.
Oh,
and
no,
it's just
totally.
Hard to really then draw boundaries and then actually move on with everyone's lives, their new relationship, your relationship.
Sanjay, before we let Jamila go, because she's in so much pain, I can't bear to watch her.
It's fine, it's fine. I've just done a 2-hour request show. I can take on the world, it's fine. I'm Indian Jones.
any advice at all?
Are you taking painkillers? How are you managing it?
No, I'm not taking painkillers because I don't, as a rule. Just for
that's
me
a bit
personally.
Wartime.
So I know. I'm being like very Bear Grylls about the whole thing. Yeah. I have a DJ gig in about 2 hours, so for a uni, freshers' night. So I'm
good
hoping the adrenaline's going to take over.
I think you should start with, hey everyone, have a good dance to this. I won't be.
Yeah.
I will just be
I
sat
wonder
here.
If I could bring in some sort of sitting down DJing. I wonder if that could be like
exactly.
a thing.
Make it homely.
I could just do it all enough. With my eyes, you know.
All right. Well
thank you for having me.
Not at all. Have a good night, and I hope you feel better.
So do I, Alan. Okay. So do I. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, lovely. 03-700-100-100 if you want to get hold of us. 03-700-100-100. Or you can text us on 81199. Calls and texts coming up after Nicki Minaj.
The Surgery on BBC Radio 1.
03-700-100-100. Hello, if you just tuned in to Radio 1 from some TV show, God knows what. Or you can text us on 81199 on Twitter, hashtag R1Surgery. If you want to get involved, we'll get that in the studio as well. Dr. Sanjay, are you ready with the odd question on text?
Oh, absolutely, really ready.
Hello, my name is Kevin and my boyfriend is going to uni in England. Is it worth a long-distance uni relationship? I don't want to lose him, as it's difficult to stay in a gay relationship in Belfast.
Kevin, it's a really tricky thing, and particularly now, with everyone moving around the country, it can be really, really hard. I think when it comes to long-term relationships, I think the key thing is about communication. And it's a bit easier now. It's not the times of Pride and Prejudice where you need to stick a letter in and go on a horse. There's email, there's Skype, there's Twitter, there's lots of things that you can really keep that relationship going. And it can be hard because actually not having that person there, you know, to spend the time with physically can be really, really difficult. But also know that, you know, if you do then have the opportunity to then make plans to meet each other, that can be really special as well.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it can also bring in insecurities as well, because that's another important thing.
Well, yeah. Okay, well, before we even go on to the insecurities, I was going to say about the communication thing, it's not just about talking. It's actually, it's deeper than that, because what talking allows you to do is to share each other's lives. Because you can't do it in real life. You can't actually see each other every 3 days and go, you know, oh, I've just done this, I've done that, or hang out with them and see these things. So talking is the only way. Yeah. And what is a relationship if it's not sharing each other's lives?
But
so talking will be amazing and is what's needed to keep each other relevant.
That's it.
With what's going on. Trust, yeah. So how do you trust someone in that case? Because university is a scary time because everyone's, it's like a bag of hormones have just been, you know, thrown up in there and, you know, see how everything drops.
To a dance beat.
Yeah, I know this because we were doing freshers last week and my goodness are their hormones.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. And again, it just all brings down to exactly what you said about communication. Keeping people informed, letting people know what you're doing. It doesn't have to be that sort of stifling. You don't have to be giving them like an itinerary of your absolute day, but just involving people, because it can be like...
If it was me, I would demand that, frankly. I don't know where you've been or who you've spoken to.
I want photos.
And that's all healthy, I'm sure. What shall I do? I'm 14 and I've never had a girlfriend. I'm not very popular with the girls. Do you have any advice on how I could get a girlfriend? From Anonymous.
It's really difficult because a lot of times people feel that there's a lot of pressure to be in a relationship, to have a girlfriend, to have a boyfriend, and for some reason that reflects on you and who you are as a person. I think forget about the pressure. If that's what you want, if a relationship is what you want, then think about, and if you're feeling not confident in yourself, think about yourself first. Think about the things that you like about yourself and build on those and see those kind of qualities. Because then when you do grow up to somebody, and that can be either casually becoming a friend with them, which I think is probably the most idealist way, really comfortable and you get to know each other, then those positive values will then sort of shine through. I think if you think too much on the pressure of being in a relationship and you need to be with a girl, you need to be with a boy, that can really it can really come across, actually.
I think so. Confidence is the key.
People
who walk up to someone else with confidence just win people over. Whether that the person thought you were attractive or not, if you come up to them and make them feel amazing, then you're halfway there.
And that's it. And it's about being interested in people. It doesn't have to be the loudest person, the funniest person. It's actually being interested in somebody and having that connection. Yeah.
I read a book once that said one of the easiest things to do is to just have a lot of questions prepared.
Yeah.
Find out what they're into through like friends and stuff. And then walk up to them and say, right, hello, I'm Aled. I hear you're into films. What's the latest film you've seen? And then have a couple of follow-up questions ready to go. So when you are scared by the fact that it is quite scary talking to the opposite sex, especially at 14, then you've got these questions ready to go. And the thing is, the book said that some people, when they had a conversation where it was all questions about them, they walked away going, he was lovely to talk to. What a lovely guy. And in fact, he didn't actually do much of the talking. It was all you. But people just feel really good about talking about themselves.
Because they're noticed and they're validated. And it's really lovely when people take an interest in you. And it's also then nice when, you know, people do the same back. So that's a really nice way, I think, starting.
We've had a much heavier text come in saying, I cut myself and I want to tell my parents. I love them and I know they will blame themselves, but it's really not their fault. How do I tell them without hurting them?
It's really difficult. I think it's a really difficult time, obviously, if that's how you're feeling, the need to express yourself. And it can be, unfortunately, a lot of people's way of trying to express their emotions. And some people do it through various ways, and cutting can be one.
Which seems ridiculous because, you know, the pain that you'd go through, you never, if you're not that kind of person who needs to do it, you know, to see someone else or to know of someone else who expresses themselves in that way, that just seems mad, you know?
Yeah, of course it does. And exactly. And I think telling your parents, they may feel exactly the same. They may feel shocked. They may feel upset for you. They may not understand. So it's about really thinking about, I think it's really important, the key is talking about it to somebody. And that doesn't necessarily have to be your parents. It can be maybe other family members that you maybe get on with. It could also be your GP or anyone local, sort of either at your school, if you're at school, sorry, you can go to maybe see your school nurse or school counsellor, or even talking about it with your friends or your teacher. So it's about talking about it, because obviously it's becoming quite significant that you're having to hurt yourself. So,
but it is important to talk, as you say.
Absolutely.
And even though you may be worried that the parents will be upset by this, actually it is essentially talk, because actually all it is that you're just expressing it in one particular way. Precisely. And a much more healthier way of expressing it would be by talking to someone. Yeah. And you never know, you might get to the bottom of what the issues are.
Exactly.
Which will help you avoid having to cut yourself. Okay, let's talk now about alternative versus conventional therapy. I'm joined in the studio, as you know, by Dr. Sanjay, but also GP and homeopath Dr. Charlotte Mendes da Costa. We want to talk to you now about physical and mental well-being and how you're treating it or considering treating it. And are prescription drugs always the best choice? If you have asthma, hay fever or eczema, how are you treating it right now? Call us, let us know. Would you ever consider something different? Surgery lines are open, 03700 100 100. That's 03700 100 100, or text 81199. We're here to help, and we have two doctors in the house to help you today. Now, if you don't know much about homeopathy, hello, welcome to my world. Don't worry, we'll find out a lot more about it tonight. It says here it's been available in the NHS since 1948. So do you know what, let's bring in Dr. Charlotte now. Hello, Dr. Charlotte.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Do you like the colours in my studio, by the way?
I do,
yeah. Aren't they very nice? We're all lit up blue and pink tonight, so I thought I'd make it very showbiz and special just for you.
Yeah, thanks.
So is it true it's been on the NHS since 1948?
It has. Not many people know that.
No, it feels like quite a new thing.
Yeah, oh God, no. It's been around for over 200 years, and there's a homeopathic hospital right near here in Great Ormond Street, actually, that's been there since the 1850s. And it looks like it's a really old building.
So what is homeopathy?
Well, homeopathy is a type of medicine where it uses a principle, if you like curing like. So if you give the medicine in its natural form, it would cause symptoms that would be similar to the disease or the symptoms that you have. So you have to choose a medicine very carefully.
So if you have something... Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of an example here that might be all right.
Yeah.
That you'd give them a little bit of that too to make yourself feel better.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, for example, you could take an onion and cut it up, and you'd get tears, and your eyes would run, your nose might run, you might cough, And those are the kind of symptoms that are similar to cough and cold, as well as perhaps hay fever. And homeopathic onion is actually used sometimes in the treatment of colds.
Wow.
And hay fever. Yeah.
So if you are interested in this, who should you go and see? Is it your GP?
You could see your GP. Unfortunately, there are only about 400 GPs in the whole country who practice homeopathy, but you can look them up on the Faculty of Homeopathy website if you want to find
Maybe
out.
Just Google it now.
Yes, yeah, you can Google that. And then there are what are called lay homeopaths who are not medical doctors, and they're usually with the Society of Homeopaths. There are quite a few more of those, but basically, I'd advise that if you've got a serious medical condition, you should see a doctor or a medically qualified person.
Okay. Yeah. So are these the... I'm just trying to place it in normal life. So are these the little tablets you can buy?
Yeah, you can buy them in a lot of chemists. Am I allowed to mention brands here?
Well, do you know
not really.
Lots of chemists. There's not that many around.
A lot of chemists, so, yes. Well, I mean, Boots stock homeopathic remedies. And then there are some homeopathic pharmacies around the country as well, and they do mail order. But
is it controversial, this? Because you make it sound like it's such an easy answer. Why is everyone not doing this?
Well, that's a good question. It's controversial, but also a lot of people just don't know anything about it, which is why it's great that I'm on your show tonight. It's controversial because the way the medicines are made, they're very, very diluted. So, in fact, there's none of the original substance left. So you might ask the question, well, how does it work and why does it work? Which is what a lot of doctors and scientists are uncomfortable with and get, you know, really up in arms and even prejudiced about. But
if it's been around for 200 years, they've had time to look into this.
Oh, they have, yeah. I mean, there are loads of trials that have shown that it's worked, and a lot of doctors have written, you know, huge books, you know, with all their cases and everything. So, and I find it works in my day-to-day practice, so I'm satisfied.
All right, cool. Well, if you've got any questions for Dr. Charlotte or Dr. Sanjay, give us a call now, 03700 100 100, or you can text us on 81199. Okay, here's a text that we've had, and let us know if this is something that you could help with. It may not be right for homeopathy. I'm having sleeping problems and haven't slept in 4 days, and my exams are coming up. Please help from Caleb in Plymouth. So, Dr. Sanjay, I'll start with you.
Caleb,
if I had your mic open, sorry.
I'll do it by mime. Yeah. I think, Caleb, it's really difficult. If you haven't slept in 4 days, and particularly if you've got exams coming up, you must be feeling horrendous during the day. Sleep is difficult for some people, and some people experience difficulty in sleep, and that's what that's called insomnia. And that can be difficult to getting off to sleep, but also can be, you can get off to sleep, but then you keep waking up. It is something that you really need to look at a lot of different factors to find out what's contributing to your sleep. So it could be that it's the exams that are coming up for you, Caleb, that are keeping you awake. And in those kind of things, you need to acknowledge that, but then also think about how you're going to sort of de-stress, take those worries and anxieties away from you before you go to sleep. And that sometimes can be distraction, that can be sometimes putting the books away, having a shower, listening to some music that you like, just to clear your head before you go to sleep. Other things to think about, and these may sound sort of common sense stuff, but done together can be really helpful. So think about the environment that you're sleeping with. Don't have your computer on, don't watch TV or the radio just before going to bed, because then your brain's still going. Think about the environment that you are in, terms of also how hot the room is, how cold it is, how bright it is. And then also think about what you're doing just before you're going to sleep. You're not drinking.
You're probably revising. That's the thing. Yeah, all this stress and pressure coming up because of exams.
Yeah, and so
that's probably on your mind, isn't it?
And you may be drinking coffee, you may be having sort of fizzy drinks, like stimulant drinks to keep his attention, and that may be affecting it as well. So address those issues.
Before we come over to Dr. Charlotte, I've just been told that Gemma's on line one and we want to talk to Gemma. So hello, Gemma.
Hello.
Hi. How can we help you tonight?
Well, I have depression and insomnia. I've been treated for depression about 6 months, I think. And they've recently upped my antidepressants, but I'm still not sleeping, like, a lot. I find it really, really difficult to fall asleep. And I was wondering whether what medicine would be good to try, and whether it would be good to do something that isn't sort of... I don't know what the right word is for it, but like,
I'm with you.
I mean,
because you've been given tablets already, so you've seen doctors, you've seen medical people, and is it helping the depression? By the way, can I ask?
Well, they did recently double my dose because I was still really bad. So,
but it's having side effects now, which is becoming as important to you as the depression in the first place. Okay, on surgery, it's difficult sometimes to take callers from people who have already been seeing doctors. I appreciate that before I even pass over to you guys. Any advice, anything that you might want to offer up? Dr. Charlotte, let's start with you, because this is actually quite a difficult case for insomnia.
It is quite tricky,
because it's linked with depression.
Mm.
Is there anything down the route of homeopathy that could help, or would she be better? Would Gemma be better staying with what she's doing?
Yeah, well, it's quite tricky because, you know, it's difficult to know how Gemma is and how depressed she is now. And, you know, you have to do quite a long assessment and maybe with a questionnaire and things like that.
But it's not out of the question, though, is it?
Those antidepressants aren't really working, and that's why she's still not sleeping. That's a possibility. It's also possible, just to bear in mind, that the tablets themselves are causing sleeplessness, because some antidepressants are known to cause sleeplessness, especially what we call sort of SSRIs, like Prozac and things.
Okay.
So that's just something. But yeah, I mean, homeopathy might help, and I wouldn't necessarily say just stop the drugs straight away, because that could cause big problems. But you might think about something like homeopathic coffee, which is actually homeopathic coffee. Take one before you go to bed. That's quite readily available. There's also something called batch sleep remedies. It's not actually homeopathic, but they're really great and completely non-addictive and can help a lot of people, I find.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Anything to add, Dr. Sanjay?
Yeah, Gemma, I mean, is there anything that's particular that's keeping you awake at night? Or are you able to get to sleep and then you just keep waking up?
Most of the time I don't get any sleep. I just think too much, I think, is the main thing, that I can't get my brain to switch off.
Yeah, now that can be a really common problem, and I think now you've identified that, perhaps it is about trying to figure out ways that you can to try to sort of switch off, try to distract your mind, try to relax in certain ways, and it's different for different people, but it's really good that you've identified that being one of the problem. And Dr. Charlotte's absolutely right, sometimes tablets and the medications can cause problems, so it's really worth, I know it's great that you've got a good relationship with your GP that's obviously following you up, but so really keep them informed as well, because like I say, there are other medications that can be helpful. That can also help with sleep as well.
So I hear that there's awkwardness in the studio, that you don't want to prescribe anything particular because there are so many things involved here, but the message is, for Gemma, there are other options that you can look into, so it is worth going back to seek further medical advice. Okay, brilliant. That is quite straightforward. Thank you very much, Gemma, for calling in. 03700 100 100 is the number to get hold of us. 811 Love it. And was my highlight last night when I was DJing at Freshers Gig, because everyone just seems to know that dance. It got played from like 3 times the whole evening, and it was just brilliant. So that was Gangnam Style, the UK's number one by Psy.
The Surgery with Alid.
BBC Radio 1.
It's a busy show tonight. We're talking about a topic that we haven't talked about in a very long time. In fact, I think for the first time ever for me on The Surgery. And it's a very interesting subject. It's about alternative therapies versus conventional therapies. And although we talk about it being versus, actually, I think the message seems to be that a mixture of both seems to be an answer for some people. 03700 100 100 is the phone number to call if you want to get on air. 03700 100 100. Or you can text us on 81199 if you've got any questions or comments. Maybe you've gone through the alternative therapy route and have some advice for us. Whether, you know, share some thoughts, let us know what you think. Let's have a look. Dex has done just that. I used to have insomnia, and I found that looking at TVs or phones never help, and just eating more healthier foods and green leafy veg helped me a lot. Thanks a lot, Dex. Danny has texted in saying, I keep my asthma and eczema under control by drinking at least 3 litres of water a day, moisturising daily and avoiding foods that are heavily processed. Actually, I can identify with you, Danny, because I had eczema when I was younger, and cutting out the processed foods helped me as well. Another eczema text has come in. I've had eczema for years all over my face and neck to the point where I wouldn't leave the house if it all flared up. I went to see an acupuncturist who did a special allergy test which the doctors had never even considered. I discovered my intolerances and it changed my life. I haven't had any eczema since. Amazing story. And then a question's come in saying my best friend has had depression for 3 years and conventional treatments haven't been helping. So her parents are sending her to a hypnotherapist. She's quite doubtful of how much it can help, and I want to support her, but I'm actually very cynical about it too. Can you explain how hypnotherapy works and give me some advice on how to encourage her with this? Well, I'm joined in the studio still by Dr. Sanjay and Dr. Charlotte. So, Sanjay, any advice?
Well, hypnotherapy for some people can, and for certain conditions, there is evidence to show that it does work, as Dr. Charlotte was saying previously, that actually for problems like irritable bowel, that hypnotherapy can be one of the alternative therapies that can work. And I think what's important to understand about it is that there are lots of alternatives out there, and what we should really try to do is not to not find out about them and not to close our minds to them, because they all can help in different ways.
I kind of get the feeling that hypnotherapy works for certain people.
Precisely.
Like suggestive people or people who are open to stuff, because I'm going to drop a name here. Excuse you. Let's see if you can see this coming. I once did hypnotherapy with Paul McKenna.
Nice.
And it was part of the Chris Moore show, and I have a fear of flying. Mm-hmm. And so Chris sent me over as part of the show to be hypnotized. That's what I'm looking for. And we went through the whole process, and I could bore you to ever about the process, but it actually did happen for me that it felt like 5 minutes passed and 40 minutes had passed. Mm. And what he did was he focused really on putting yourself in a happy, comfortable, calm place when, in my case, I was nervous and having a bit of a panic attack.
Yeah.
And so now when the plane takes off, I do find myself thinking of my happy place that was the beach with my friends, and I have this song in my head, which was Benny Hill. And every time the plane takes off, all I can hear is and so he's kind of put it. Now, whether it's some dark art or whether it's a theory that actually worked or whether it's just that I'm suggestive, well, I don't know, but it's helped me.
Exactly, and it does help, and I think that's the most important thing, and as I'm sure Dr. Charlotte agrees, as GPs, we want to practice best evidence medicine, and sometimes we've also got to understand that there's lots of different things that work for different people, and it's very individual. And what you were describing there actually is the basis of lots of other therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy and things like that, that all can be helpful. If you're a bit skeptical, that's great, because actually that probably means you've got questions, and there's lots of information on the internet that can answer all of those. And then also, like, the actual hypnotherapists themselves should be able to tell you exactly.
It's almost a shame. Be careful of the line between questions and closed mind. If you go in saying it's not going to work, it's not going to work, then it's not going to work.
Mm.
But at least have an open mind to it. It might not work for you, but at least you've tried it.
Precisely. And actually, it can be a bit of a challenge as well, because if there's we get patients every day that come in with things that, oh, I've heard this, or I don't think this medication is going to work for me. But actually, it's important then to challenge those ideas. Why don't you think it's going to work? What have you heard about it? What are your reservations about it? So actually then talking it through actually opens discussion, so it can be quite good.
Yeah, I'd agree. And it's also about giving you the tools to have yourself, isn't it? Because, I mean, you know, you can have a really good time with your counsellor. I mean, I don't mean a good time, but, you know, it can be really helpful, and you can open your heart and, you know, air a lot of your feelings. But when it comes down to it, and you're on that plane and about to take off, or in that situation where you're getting a lot of anxiety or panic or depression even, then you need that tool. You need to go to that place, which is special.
Benny Hill.
I think some of our listeners might not know who Benny Hill is.
No, absolutely. Yes. Totally true. But I can't put a different song in there, because that is actually the song I hear. So I had to go with fact. All right, let's go to line one. And Sarah's there. Hello, Sarah.
Hiya.
Hi, Sarah. How can we help tonight?
I'm always at work and college, and I never have time for my friends.
Okay. That's a problem, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So I suppose what you're asking is, how can you make that happen?
Yeah, I don't know. I work like over 30 to 40 hours a week, and I go to college for 2 half days and a full day. So it's kind of like I don't have time for friends, and I feel bad saying no to them when they invite me out.
Why do they not work as much as you? Is it because, why are you specifically?
I don't know. I just constantly work because of my job, and then I'm at college, and they're all like, they just go to college, they don't work.
all right for some, isn't it? You know, but then they're not going to have the pocket money that you're going to have, are they, at the end of the day? All right, Dr. Sanjay.
Sarah, you're obviously working very, very hard at college and at work. And I think, but what you're asking is about how to address that kind of balance.
Yeah.
And you can be working and you can be doing and achieving all the goals that you want to. But for example, it can be frustrating, particularly like if you're missing out on the social aspect. And that's really important. And it's great that you want to try to do that. I think the fact that you want to, it's about figuring out between your friends if there's any other times between work, between college, whether it be through lunch breaks, meeting them for lunch or anything like that, that you can actually still maintain that connection. Yeah, you may not be able to go on the big Friday night out, but perhaps you could just go out for a little bit and then, you know, come back home, particularly if you're working the next day. So they're your friends, and so they're going to understand, and they're probably really willing to try to adapt within, you know, the commitments that you have.
As someone who's come off a very busy show, I'd like to also say, Sarah, if they're friends of yours, if they're real friends, then you will go through periods in your life where you'll be very busy, what with exams coming up and also work, but they will be there at the end of that busy period as well. So this panic that you're feeling that you're not included and you're not seeing them, look at the bigger picture and longer term, and friends will be there through thick and thin. So don't stress too much, Sarah, but I suppose the only person who can decide how your work, play, college balance works is really you, you know, and whether you're willing to work less but have less money.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's difficult, isn't it? And all you can do is talk to your friends, but they're going to learn the lesson quite soon as well, especially with exams coming up, that we can't always see each other all the time.
Yeah.
You sound so disappointed. Aww. I'm so sorry, Sarah. I want to be able to give you a magic pill here that says, right, here's an extra 10 hours a day to see friends.
Sarah, do you feel that you can sort of adapt, or, you know, incorporate your friends within all the commitments that you have? Or do you think that's still going to be a challenge?
I think it's still going to be a challenge because they do like full-time college, like they're like 5 days a week. And because I'm only 2 half-days in a full day, and the rest of the time, like, nights I'm working, and then during the days I'm working, weekends I work, so...
Well, if
And then obviously I want to see family as well, so you're kind of like...
I think if you get a day, the best thing to do then is to, if you do get a day off, just schedule it in advance and make sure your friends know this is a rare day that I've got off, or half a day I've got off. Can we use this wisely and see each other, rather than what you probably want to do is just relax and chill.
But effective planning can be really helpful as well.
Good luck with it, Sarah.
Yeah, good luck.
Text coming from Chloe saying, I'm 15 and I've been getting panic attacks from stress of exams, work and other things, but I've never had them before. Why am I having them, and how do I conquer them?
Well, panic is a really common symptom, and also anxiety, and that's all kind of related to them. And most people do feel anxious and panic at some times, and sometimes that can be helpful because it can motivate, it can focus you. But for some people, it can actually be out of proportion to what you're feeling. It can be even at times when there's no obvious reason for it. So it's for those people you need to really think about how you're going to manage those symptoms. So you've identified it, that you've obviously got the exams coming up, so that's obviously an area that's going to be causing you panic. So think about what that is. Is it because you feel that you're behind? Is it feel that you're not giving yourself enough downtime? And so really address what's causing that kind of panic. Important thing is to talk about it. For example, the people around you, whether that be friends or family, to feel that, you know what, you're getting really anxious, you're getting really panicky here, and see if they can also help. Your GP is a useful point of contact as well, because they can also refer you for talking treatments, because sometimes actually thinking about how you're feeling, processing those thoughts, and then processing then how you deal with those thoughts can be really useful in those times.
Because there's two things, as you say. There's the panic attack themselves and how to conquer it, but also the reason for the panic attack.
Precisely.
And the fact that you've put here, Chloe, that you're stressed about the exams, work and other things, suggests to me that you're looking ahead at your timetable of the next few weeks and just taking everything up on board and then stressing about how much. And the best way of dealing with it, and I don't know why, but I think I knew your text was coming in, but this week I was trying to think of an answer for this question, even though I hadn't thought it. And I came up with my parents when they were driving to London. Mm-hmm. It's a long journey, and it's so long that they can't possibly take on every turn and every step of the journey at once. And what you do, you'd never think of doing that, would you? Yeah. You'd probably go to your online thing and print off a map or something, or you'd have your sat nav. And what you'll do is you'll take each turn at when you come up to it. So you'll take it all bit by bit. If my parents had to think about the entire journey one go, they wouldn't bother driving to London because it'd be such a scary near experience. So you break it down into bits as you come along to it. Mm. And when it comes to exams, it's the same thing. Don't look at the whole thing, otherwise you'll just go ape. It'll just be too much for you.
Yeah.
Break
yeah.
it down into small sections. See yeah. which bit you're facing at a time and deal with that section only. It'll help you with your panic and your anxiety.
That's excellent advice. Mm.
Yeah.
Zoe's texting saying, I sometimes get a sick feeling in my stomach. It makes me feel really anxious. It's really hard to get rid of. What causes this and how can I stop it? Zoe's 15. So well, that's anxiety, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it can be. You're absolutely right, Alid. I think Zoe can be feeling anxious. What happens is then your stress hormone called adrenaline is pumping around your veins. That can affect your heart. It can affect your stomach. It can affect you so you get these kind of sweaty palms. All of that kind of stuff.
Even
is
if
a reaction.
You don't know what it is.
Well, that's the thing. You also need to think about what other things may be causing it. You've also got to think about if you're getting that kind of feeling in your stomach, it's important to let somebody know about it so they can really take a detailed history. It may be the foods that you're eating, it may be something to do with your stomach. You've got to look about then how you're going to the toilet, all that kind of stuff, because they all are related to how your stomach can feel. So it's if you've identified that's the issue, then I think it's really worth actually going to speak to somebody like a GP about it. They can go through all the different things that may cause that kind of feeling, and like I said, it may be panic. So then actually once that's identified, then we can think about how to deal with it.
You'll also find that there is something there. You may not be obvious to you. It won't be right at the front of your mind. But if you just spend a certain amount of time talking to someone, it could even be writing it down if there isn't someone to talk to, and just list everything that's on your mind, everything that's bothering you, school, college, work, everything that it is. And in that list, you'll hit on something and you'll suddenly feel slight relief that you've written it down and you've identified something that's bothering you. And once you know what it is, at least then you can start the step to dealing with
it. Exactly.
That's good advice, yeah. And I'd say, I mean, go to your parents first, really. I mean, I'm a GP and I love to see people with that sort of problem, but talk to the people who love you most and who care about you and really understand you.
Even if you don't feel it, they do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
That's their job, to sit there
it
and listen and make sure they love you. All right, 03700 100 100. That's 03700 100 100. If you want to call us on the surgery, you can also text us if you want, because there's only a quarter of an hour left. That's 81199. Or send us a tweet, hashtag R1Surgery. And we'll get that in the studio. Here's Amelia Lilly. We love that. Amelia Lilly, you bring me joy on Radio 1.
The Surgery with Alid.
BBC Radio 1.
We're now into our last section of the show. So, if you haven't got on the radio and you want to get on, call us now. 03700 100 100. That's 03700 100 100. Or you can text us on 81199. Don't be scared. We don't bite. You don't have to use your real name. And I can guarantee there'll be lots of people listening with exactly the same problem as you. So you're going to help a lot of other people. We're going to talk about relationships, so that's something that a lot of people have and can identify with. So let's go to line two and speak to Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Hey, Mark. You're live on Radio 1. How can we help tonight?
Hiya. What is? I've been recently engaged to my girlfriend. We've been together 5 years. We got engaged 3 weeks ago. The last 2 weeks, I know, we're having a really bad time. We've been arguing. I found out a bit about my history, and there's been trust issues
since you proposed.
Yeah, since I proposed. I proposed. I was madly in love. We had a great week, and then for the last 2 weeks, it's just been hell.
Okay.
We've not really been getting on at all. I'm just worried that things are going to end.
Okay, well, before I hand you over to Dr. Sanjay, what I would say, first of all, is you've just racked up the pressure, haven't you, by asking her to marry you. So all of a sudden, the two of you now are looking at your relationship and all the detail, I imagine, and you're basically going, is this who I want to be with the rest of my life? And what you're doing is you're fighting out about everything. So before there's even any discussion about exes or past history, you've got to take into consideration that there's lots of extra pressure on this relationship now until the marriage. Because that's what people do, isn't it? You start to panic about stuff. But what were you arguing about? Was anything in particular?
Well, it was just like, obviously, it was on a night out, and she found out something that happened in my sexual history before I got with her.
Before you went out, okay.
Yeah, but it's because I didn't tell her about it. She's really kicked up a fuss, like, and then it's just escalated into bigger things.
Does the fact that you've proposed to her, which means that you're choosing her now for life, does that not mean anything as part of these conversations? Does she recognise that?
Well, that's what my side of the argument is, but I think it's she wants to know every little detail about my life.
Are you happy to tell her every little detail about your life?
Well, I have done, but she just doesn't believe me anymore. She can't trust me.
Okay, Dr. Sanjay.
Well, I think Alice has talked really, loads of good points about it, Mark. I think, congratulations, but I'm probably not feeling too great about it now, because exactly what Alid was saying, it just brings up all the issues. It's a huge step, and it, for both of you, you're probably sort of thinking about, you know, you're in love and everything's going wonderful, and you obviously want to make that amazing commitment to each other, but like I said, it's a commitment, and hopefully it's a commitment for a long time, and it can bring up insecurities. It also can bring up expectations as well. And what it sounds like, Mark, with her finding out about something about you that she didn't know, it may be springing up a lot of insecurities and worries in her mind. I think the key thing in here is, like I say, remember the good stuff. Remember the reasons why you want to be together and communicate. So obviously she's feeling hurt, maybe insecure about it, maybe. So address those kind of things. Think about why you didn't tell her. Think about, was there a reason on your end that you didn't feel like you wanted to talk about your sexual past? But then also think about how you're going to talk it through. And actually, you addressing the issue is a very brave thing. It's a very mature thing to do. And actually, maybe that will help build her up and build her, build her security with the situation.
Mark, this is a weird question, but I want to know, would you like these arguments to stop at all costs? Can you calm things down? Or are you kind of saying, I don't have to answer to her about every little detail? Where's your mind on it?
Well, I'm saying, like, I just want to tell her everything about me, but, like, there's nothing, I'm not hiding anything from her.
Great.
But she just doesn't believe that. She won't believe me.
Why don't you ask her what it will take for her to trust you, right? So, and actually, here's an interesting idea. I don't know whether it's right or wrong, but I've done it in the past and it's worked for me. Say to her, it's all about her now. That's why you're marrying her. You've been open and honest. You will answer whatever question there is, and you will ask her, what does she need? Does she need to see who you're texting? Does she need to be able to talk to you at any time of day or night? Does she, whatever it is, and then let her have it, you know, and then let her come to terms with it.
Yeah, I think because it's about trust, and it's about trust in each other, and I think maybe she feels that she just can't trust you because she's heard something that she didn't know about you. So it's about building that trust up, I think, and it's about you actually being open, as Alice said, and being honest about it. That's half the battle. And then how she then deals with it, then that's kind of up to her as well, because she then has to make a choice if she can handle that.
Exactly. You're completely within your right, Mark, to say, I'm sorry, I'm not opening up my phone to you all the time because I've done nothing wrong.
That's not healthy.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
But if that's what she needs and you want her to calm down, then see what it is she needs from you and see if you can deliver that. And if you can't, then, you know, that's down to her then to decide about where you go the next few steps.
Remember that there's good stuff there, Mark, and it's just about building on that and just dealing with the issue at hand, as I said, and communicating is the most important thing.
It doesn't feel it now, but it's perfectly doable. You will be able to get the trust back, and you will be back on track for your marriage.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we hope so too.
Well, good luck, Mark.
Take care.
With the marriage, and good luck with the relationship as well. See, if he cares that much, that he's willing to call in to us to talk about it,
I wish he could
just get it over to
her. But
she's
probably just hurt. She's probably feeling insecure. And I think actually him stepping up and saying, look, okay, I'm going to be honest about things. I'm going to tell you everything that you need to know.
It sounds such a nice, genuine bloke. Yeah.
Doesn't he?
And she maybe just needs a bit of space to come to terms with what happened in the past.
There's
really nothing to do with her.
Homeopathic tablets you can have for trust?
No.
Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't it be?
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
A bit of trust diluted down, give it to someone,
and
away you go. Let's go to line one. Hello, Cherry.
Hello.
Hello. How can we help tonight?
I've just been recently diagnosed with depression and alopecia.
Okay. What's alopecia?
It's an illness where your hair falls out.
Okay.
And I just wanted to know if, like, anyone had any advice on it, because I haven't really been told a lot about it, and as far as I can find, there's not many treatments for it, so...
Okay. So the person who diagnosed you presumably was a GP?
Yeah.
And did you have any questions at that time, just so that we know how much you know before we jump in?
They checked me for an infection to see if it was, like, a fungal infection, and it wasn't. And she told me it was a stress-related alopecia. And I've tried to de-stress, and they've given me antidepressants.
But that's the hardest thing to do, isn't it? You can't just not stress overnight.
I know, it's just so difficult. And, like, obviously, because I'm only 20, like, and I'm a girl.
Yeah.
My hair's falling out. It's very, like, hard to deal with.
Okay. Dr. Sanjay.
Hi, Cherry. It must be a really difficult situation. Not only are you feeling low, and then you're having this on top as well, and so it can be really difficult. And you're right, hair loss, alopecia, can be either a general problem or it can be localised. And there's lots of reasons why you can get alopecia, and one of them, exactly what you said, can be stress. And what's really great, though, Cherry, is that you've identified the issue and you're dealing with it really maturely and you've sought some help, and they're going to be dealing with that in terms of the medication will help, but then also thinking about how you're de-stressing yourself.
I'd also imagine that having alopecia will add to the stress.
Absolutely, because it will also, like I said, there's a lot of links with hair and identity. There's loads of stuff in the media, all these amazing Cheryl Cole-type hair situations, and there's a lot to live up to, and it can affect people's self-esteem and their identity. I think the important thing to remember, Cherry, is that, you know, you're dealing with the stress, and so for a lot of people with stress-related alopecia, once you're dealing with the stress, your hair can regrow, and so it's not just to lose complete hope.
That's true, actually.
And I think, and also in practical terms, I know it can be really hard if you're dealing with thinning hair. It's about thinking about then how you can help in just on a practical level, and sometimes that might be actually just going to your hairdresser, getting some advice from them, wearing your hair differently for a little while.
Yeah.
So there's certain products that can help with the appearance of your hair, so those things can be explored. But then also think about, again, with the underlying stuff, if there's antidepressants are good, but there's also other stuff that can be really helpful, other talking therapies that can also help express and de-stress as well.
But it does sound like if it's stressed based, then really the whole issue then is trying to find out what's stressing you and dealing with it.
That's it. And Cherry, it must be really hard because, like I said, it can affect how people feel about themselves. But these are the times when you really got to think about the stuff that makes you you, you know, the positive stuff that you like about yourself, and focus on those. And even though when you probably look in the mirror, that may be all that you see, but actually there's so much more that makes you you. And if you focus on those positive things, you know, that will help, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you're so right, Sanjay, because Cherry, you just really got to focus on what's right and true about you. And also, I mean, sometimes the alopecia itself can cause depression, I would say, and stress, because it is so such an awful thing, especially for a girl.
So the advice in a nutshell is go back to a GP and ask to speak to someone about dealing with the stress side of it, as well as the physical side. Good luck, Cherry. Thanks a lot for calling into the surgery. We've had a text that's come in from Lizzie. Actually, I'll be honest, it was a phone call to begin with, but we can't get hold of her, so I want to talk about it anyway. Her name is Lizzie, and she lives at home with her parents, which is a Christian home. Her parents wanted to stay, but they're quite restrictive. Every time she brings up the subject with them, it causes problems as they want her to stay. What should she do? Should she just up and leave? Topic we had very recently on this very topic, actually, very similar to this. So, let's see what we said last time for this. Lizzie, what should we do?
Do we know how old Lizzie is?
Lizzie's 22.
22. And they want her to stay at home.
Her parents wanted to stay at home,
For how long? I mean, forever? Or?
Well, you know, so you love your kids, don't you? You know?
I mean, if you love your kids, then you let their wings grow, don't you? And let them fly the nest. And that's what being a Christian is, really. It's about, you know, loving your neighbour and your children. And loving them for what they are.
So how does she have that conversation with her parents then? Because presumably there's no hint in this text of any bad feeling between them. They're not fighting or anything.
Well, exactly.
So keep that positive, really.
And find out what their concerns are. What are they worried about if she does leave? They obviously, you know, they know that their children are going to grow up one day and they are going to leave. But if there are any reservations that they're having about how she's going to cope, and then addressing those. And so, Lizzie, you can then give them the reassurance that actually you've got these things in place, you're going to be able to do, you know, cope, and then you also are going to keep in contact, because that's another problem. People think once you've left the nest of the home, actually you're never going to call, you're never going to text. So providing that reassurance to the parents can also be really helpful.
So find out what their concerns are and negate them.
Yes.
Get rid of the problems. Okay. Good luck, Lizzie. Lucy's texting saying, I've been advised to take cognitive behavioural therapy to face my embarrassing fear of loud noises, but don't really know what's going to happen during it. Please explain what is this thing and what happens.
Well, cognitive behavioural therapy.
In 1 minute.
Okay, in 1 minute. It's a talking therapy, and it can be really useful for people because it's about dealing with thought processes. And with phobias and things like that, things that are related to anxiety, cognitive behavioural therapy can be really good because it can identify how you're thinking about it, what your fears are, and then think about then how to change those processes.
Oh, okay.
So it's really good. It's about analysing your thoughts. What you're kind of talking about with, for example, the fear of flying, for example. So what your fears are, thinking about them, what your thought processes are when you're in that situation, and then think about how to deal with them.
So, like, breaking the link between a negative feeling with an event, creating a new link to a more positive
precisely
event.
Replacing it with a more positive thought.
Well, exactly. Perhaps. And it can be really effective for people. You do need to stick to it. You do need to really think about it. And it can be something that can be done with a therapist. There's actually lots of stuff on the internet which you can actually do at home. So it doesn't even necessarily need to be to go to somebody. So it can be really helpful.
Well, I love the idea that Lucy might suddenly turn it into laughing. So when a loud noise happens, she's like, oh, that's funny. Anyway, Dr. Sanjay, Dr. Charlotte, thank you so much for coming on today's show.
Thank you very much.
Sorry we weren't able to get through everyone's texts and calls. This happens on The Surgery every week. If you still need any information or some support, then you can log on to our website, bbc.co.uk/radio1/surgery, and head over to the advice pages. That's bbc.co.uk/radio1 and click on The Surgery. You can also call our action line, which is 0800 110 100. That's 0800 110 100. Lines are open 24 hours a day. All calls are confidential. They're free from a landline, and there's lots of helpful, relevant lines on there. That's it from me. Next up now, to round off your weekend, it's Annie Mac on Radio 1.